but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
It's been said that if you want to know what's going on, all you have to do is follow the money. Well, today's radio show is going to have big guests. We're going to talk about the college football weekend, Major League Baseball, whole bunch of NFL. But first, we're going to follow the money. We'll go other places, but let's start in Corvallis. There's been a lot of talk lately about Oregon State football. The Beavers have been struggling on the field. They're 0-5. They're trying to pull it together this weekend on the road at Appalachian State. But there was a story published in Sportico about the NIL operating agreement between Oregon State and the collective, and a lot of Oregon State fans are frustrated and upset. And rather than just kind of talk around that, I figured we would go right to the direct source. And Brent Blaylock is the chief operating officer, executive deputy athletics director at Oregon State. Give us an idea. I mean, Oregon State fans are upset, Brent, and they're reading this story and they're seeing 75%. And help us understand what's going on here with the collective.
Yes, and thanks, John, for having me on here. You know, we understand the frustration with the numbers and how things were presented. What I appreciate here is the opportunity to clarify some of that. You know, I think that the big thing for us to note in this is that the first $750,000 of the funds that are generated for our student athletes, that goes directly to the student athletes. So from $0 up to $750,000, that's 100% going to our players. Where the revenue split starts is there once they clear the $750,000 mark. Now, why that's important is that gives us some certainty in a time where there's a lot of uncertainty. Now, we're expecting this deal to go well beyond that $750,000. But having that initial assurance that support is being provided directly to our student athletes, that's helpful for us, one, because our student athletes are worthy of that support, but also that is another resource line for our coaches to be able to recruit and retain the level of student athletes that we need to be successful here. And so while some of their percentages that they also talked about, you know, with the example given and some of those things, I feel like weren't given with how the contract is truly done by including annual management fees and some of those other things. I want to highlight first, because I don't think it got a lot of attention, that first $750,000 goes directly to our student athletes.
All right. First $750,000 goes to the student athletes. Then Blueprint Sports is making some money back in that middle tier. Is that from $750,000 to what, $1.15 million?
You're correct. That 75% goes up until $1.15 million. Once we clear $1.15 million, which again, we're expecting to do that as well, that's where it then becomes the 50-50 split. So as we look at this, everybody is motivated to grow the pie as much as you can. But because the more Blueprint earns for our student athletes, the more they make on that, that also motivates us as an athletic department to make sure that we're facilitating opportunities for them to max those things out. So when we're looking at the totality of those numbers, we always have to factor in that first initial tier, that $0 to $750,000, Blueprint's taking zero of those dollars. I think when we look at this stuff as well, when we look at the actual operation and how this will work with Blueprint, some other things that are not in that agreement, but they are how they operate and how they will certainly work with us, is all membership revenue goes directly to the student athletes. So if an individual signs up for, let's just say, a $500 a year membership plan, all $500 goes directly to the student athletes. They are not taking a percentage on that, because they want our supporters to know that if they support this initiative through the membership, that that's going directly to the student athletes. The other part to this as well is when it comes to individual NIL opportunities that they are negotiating on behalf of a student athlete, And it's important to note with that that this is all voluntary for the student athletes. They can choose to be a part of this or not. But if they choose to work with an individual student athlete on that, their rate to negotiate that deal on their behalf, we've been told it's in the range of 10% for that, which is a very competitive number from what we're seeing nationally. And what they do that was really meaningful for us is that, let's just say it's a $100,000 deal, hypothetically, and it's with about a 10% rate on that for their services for facilitating it. What they will do is they will go to the student athlete and say, hey, we got you a $100,000 deal, and you're getting all $100,000 of those dollars. They then plus up the deal on the company side so that they end up paying $110,000 so that the student athlete is able to take advantage of that entirety of the $100,000. So again, the student athletes aren't really bearing a lot of those costs. They're being passed on to the business. So I say that because it's important to note, because that's helping us protect those that are most important to us. It's helping us protect our supporters by making sure that their direct line investment in the memberships is going to the student athletes. And then also for our student athletes, they are getting excellent representation, but also at a really competitive and fair rate.
We're talking to Brent Blaylock, who is a deputy athletic director at Oregon State, COO. I have so many questions, but I appreciate you doing this. And I think part of good journalism is making the phone call and getting the person on the phone that can help explain it. And that's why I wanted to talk with you. But help me, you touched on this, but how does this deal compare to the rest of the market as you look at other schools? And when you go to enter into this kind of contract, I am assuming that you really do your diligence on it.
Yes, we do. So it's not only us institutionally. I know as myself and several within the athletic department, we're reaching out to peers across the country to see their thoughts. We do know that this is in line with deals like with what Maryland, who is the most recent to sign with Blueprint from us, similar to their deal as well. I also know within this process that we're here talking about this. Because of the transition in ownership, and presumably there was some due diligence done in that regard as well. And I just want to say with that, we couldn't be more appreciative of all that Kyle and his group did to get Damnation up to this point. And I know that when he was exploring options on potentially transitioning the ownership, I believe he was talking with multiple entities as well. So certainly he had some opportunity as well to learn more about Blueprint, how they do things, how they would operate, and really how they would carry the organization that he built, how they would carry that forward to do the best to help out our student athletes and our programs.
Brent, can you help me with, average fan who wants to support the NIL collective or wants to support athletes at Oregon State? How concerned would they be? What would you tell your neighbors as they go to I want to make a donation? You mentioned the memberships that are purchased that's not touched by this deal, but how does that work? And if somebody's giving $100 donation, just a small donation from a fan who wants to help out, what portion of that is being passed through to athletes? What portion potentially is going to a third party?
Are we talking about a donation directly to Damnation instead of like a membership or one of those?
Maybe
things?
You can talk about both. What's the difference there? Because I think a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, I think your question actually has to do a lot with the evolution of this marketplace and what we're seeing in the post-house environment here. So NIL collectives before had been mostly driven by donations, that people would donate in and then whoever was operating the collective, and this is across the country, would then find ways to be able to activate that with the student athletes. With the new scrutiny and the new guidelines that's coming with collectives in particular, but just NIL as a whole, a lot of this is evolving more into true activations of you are giving money to then get something back in return. So, if someone just wants to donate money, we certainly have a phenomenal team with our Beaver Nation and they're generating funds for our internal, our revenue sharing program for that. So that is a great place to be able to put just a pure donation. What we are now seeing is for those that are going to be active in the NIL third party space, that's where you're going to see a lot of things with the memberships or with events or exclusive access into things or being able to get behind the scenes with our programs and things like that. it's going to be more in that area, of which Blueprint is an absolute leader in the country, and less of just writing them a check.
All right. For people who didn't know, the Damnation Collective, essentially, was it sold to Blueprint? Is that the best way to put it, or transferred, or how do you say that?
My understanding is it was sold.
Yeah, and this is not an Oregon State thing, right? Because there is a misconception that Oregon State owned the collective. For people who don't know, Damnation and these other NIL collectives, the Boulevard for SMU, Division Street, operate independently. Some of them tried to be nonprofits. Some of them were not able to do that, or a lot of them were not able to do that. And we're talking to Brent Blaylock, who is the chief operating officer at Oregon State. All right, so in simple terms now, you've got a bunch of people blowing you up, asking you all about this stuff. You know, what do you say to people as far as the revenue share and this partnership with Blueprint and Oregon State athletes?
You know, I hope for one, there's a new perspective gained as more of this information comes to light. But because I understand that people wanted to voice their opinions on that. We appreciate the passion there, but because that shows that they're invested in the success of our student athletes and in our sport programs. But ultimately, this is a deal that is advantageous for our student athletes. It's advantageous for our teams. It's also advantageous for the department. And the reason being is that the management fee that the department is paying to Blueprint, we are getting three full-time employees for that number, as well as a team of additional behind-the-scenes people. But with that, we're also getting 4-plus years of their expertise, their experiences, their best practices, what to do, what not to do, with over 60 partners that they've had during that time. Them and SANIL, which they acquired last year, they did a combined $108 million in NIL activity in 2024. So there's a lot of expertise there. So now on our campus, they're going to know exactly what's going on at NC State or at Arkansas or at Penn State or at Maryland to be able to get those best practices. It would have been nearly impossible for us to replicate that if we were trying to do that on our own. If first you got to factor in the full cost of FTE, so our salary pool would probably have been about half that number. But then we really would have been challenged to find people with this level of expertise and experience and really the national network. So this is a great value for our department as well with what we're getting, because if we went out to market to try to do this ourselves and then do all this internally, what we would have had to pay to do that, all that would do is just take away significant resources that we can use elsewhere to either support our programs or invest into revenue sharing for our student athletes.
I think it's a really great point there with the networking you mentioned. I want to highlight that just a little bit before I let you go. But we're talking about new dollars, right? Because I think in your community and your ecosystem, I think all universities were scared that like the NIL collectives would cannibalize their gift giving and the sponsorships of the athletic department. So how important from your view is it to have new dollars and new relationships and some national relationships as you start to fund these things?
I think it's critically important. And as I said, we're always looking to grow the pie on this. And we hope that involvement with Damnation, that this is an additive, individuals are finding ways to engage with our Beaver Nation and buying tickets and doing other things. But the great thing about this is that this allows us to have touch points. Maybe there's a Beaver fan in Indiana that can't get to games and has a hard time, you know, seeing coaches out in the community and things like that. Well, they can now get involved with the membership there, some of the content, some of the other things that they get, some of the merchandise, and feel connected to that too. So where we are and where we want to be competitively, we have to take advantage of any possible revenue stream that's out there. And that's why we're appreciative of Blueprint being able to bring in this national expertise to really grow this kind of this new column. But because this is that true NIL that has now become the new priority after House, where it has to have this valid business purpose, and we have ranges of compensation and all those things. We need their expertise. And I know as well, Blueprint's leadership, they have a lead position with the overall collective group, which kind of has its own union, if you will, that negotiates directly with the CSC. So we have representation in those rooms as new policy is being debated, as new strategies are being created. which is only going to help us stay on that lead lap, which is where we want to be.
I read the Sportico piece, and just as a journalist, I saw a hole in it. I saw that, you know, nobody on your side is quoted in the piece. You know, look, they have the documents. I think it raises questions. I know I went on radio after and I said, hey, let's get to the bottom of this. I have questions. It raised my eyebrows, but let's not draw conclusions. Was there a frustration specifically with you or maybe at Oregon State when this piece comes out that you're not quoted in it, or what do you make of that?
What I'll just say generally with that is we truly appreciate you taking the time to connect and ask questions and learn more about it. You know, with sometimes as you read contracts or as you look at certain areas, you're missing other parts and,
sure,
and things like that. I certainly think there was an opportunity to get a better reflection of the information out there, but most specifically, I appreciate you taking the time to make the call ahead of time so that we can give you our perspective and we can tell you why we're so excited about this and why this is going to put our student athletes in a great position and also open up really wonderful opportunities for those that support our programs as well.
Yeah, and I think the big misconception initially was that, hey, oh wow, they're getting like Blueprint's taking 75% of everything over 750,000, but that little window, if you understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, but that's where Blueprint is sort of recouping their cost in that range between 750 and 1.15 million. They, of course, have expenses. They have employees. That's where they're getting their money back. And then it becomes, is it a 50-50 revenue share after 1.15 million? Is that correct?
It is. And that's where it really goes in that we're all invested. And again, that's on just overall dollars. But no matter where those dollars get to, the membership revenue that comes directly from those that buy the memberships, that goes directly to the student athletes. That is 100% straight through line. And again, we talked about their agency fee when they're representing student athletes getting those individual deals and how that's going to be around that 10% number and how really those costs are put off onto the company. Where Blueprint will look to get revenue is probably in some other areas like larger corporate partnerships or maybe some events and some things like that they have larger areas to be able to recoup some revenue. But whether we're at 750,000 or 750 million, if someone buys a membership, whatever money they put in for that membership, all that money is going to go directly to a student athlete.
Brent Blaylock, thank you. Thanks for your time. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Certainly, there is a fever pitch around Oregon State, and the start of this season hasn't helped the Beavers. It really just hasn't been an easy start for Oregon State athletics. But I don't think it's coincidental that the Oregon State fans were up in arms over this NIL deal and also up in arms over the start of the season. And I think if Oregon State is sitting at 2-3 or 3-2 after five games, there is a very different conversation to be had. I will say this. I try to be fair to people, and I try to be fair to the things that I cover. I don't see everybody doing it. And it's not to knock any other journalist. You know, do you, I'll do me. But I do know that my readers know that I'm going to get to the heart of the issue, and my listeners here know that we're going to get to the heart of the issue. In the initial report that came out about this deal, like people were just throwing their hands up going, 75%? But that's a huge number. Why isn't Oregon State, protecting their athletes more? Look, this NIL world, it's a new world, and we're all trying to understand it. But to have Oregon State get the first $750,000 and then let Blueprint come in and make back some of their cost, and then they get 75% of everything between 750 and 1.15 million, and then it's a 50-50 revenue share beyond, is not a bad deal for Oregon State. In fact, if it's a market deal, what are we talking about here? Thanks to Brent Blaylock for facing the music. But Oregon State football, go win a football game at Appalachian State, for crying out loud. Go win this game. They're a 1.5-point underdog on the road. We're going to talk more about it coming up. Ducks with a week off. Beavers under the spotlight, under the microscope this week. You got the BFT statewide on the Bald Faced Truth Radio Network.
Back to the Bald Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
to blend a few things together here that should go together, right? Salt and pepper go together. Oil and vinegar can go together. You know, it's meat and potatoes. They go together. What goes together at your tailgate? Well, it's good food, and then it's the sporting event. Also, I've got a soft spot for small business owners. I really do. If you listen to the show over the years, the sponsors of this show are often small businesses that are fighting the good fight. I mean, you go from companies like Shoe Mill, the shoe stores, Birch's Shoes, First Call Heating and Cooling, Gresham Ford, Bridgetown Window and Door, Anderson Pool Works. You literally go through the sponsors of this show and you realize Milwaukee Lumber, I see you guys. Shout out to the Milwaukee Lumber team. There's a lot of small business owners out there that are just fighting this amazing fight and doing it on a daily business. Our next guest coming up is one of those guys, and he's trying to do something important and good for the community. And I really would encourage people who are looking for something to do on Monday night, or maybe just someone to support in general, there's a great event going on at the World Forestry Center. We'll talk a little football here. I told you I'm going to merge together some things that go together. We're going to talk college football and food. I was at the Penn State-Oregon game in Happy Valley. I've talked a lot about my experience there. Our next guest was there as well. He was there as an Oregon fan. Mark Byram is with us. He is the czar who is at the center of the urban restaurant group. It includes restaurants in the Portland area like Brick's Tavern, Carlita's and others. And he's got a big event coming up, Taste of Portland, tasteofpdx.com. We'll tell you all about it. But Mark, let's start with your experience. All right. Give us the fan perspective of Happy Valley, the trip out there and the stadium experience. What was it like for you?
Well, first once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be out there, especially for the White House. That was amazing. A little hostile walking in, but that's because we walked by the student area where they're entering. But once we got past that, fans were great, very receptive, very curious about Oregon and what Eugene's like. They see the stories. They hear about the program. Lots of questions about Dan Lanning, you know, and a lot of optimism on their perspective, but they really felt that Oregon was going to win this game. A lot of them thought that way.
Yeah, the student section, for people who didn't get it, like, that student section was rocking, and I saw the Oregon players ran down to the student section at the end. I felt like that was the loudest part of the stadium. Where were you sitting, and how loud did you feel like it was with 111,000 people there?
We were behind the Oregon bench, row 39, so okay. About the 40-yard line. So we were in the middle of it. You know, we weren't that single green guy in the big wave of white, but we were a group of four in that big wave of white, you know, around us. So it was loud. I mean, there's times that, especially, you know, the fourth quarter when they scored the second touchdown to tie it up, that was the loudest part of the stadium and the most involved. And the irony of that is when Oregon went up 14, fans started to trickle out. So I thought, wow, they're louder with less people. But the main thing, and I talked to the group behind us, Penn State fans, I did tell them, I said, look, wait, Austin's as loud, if not louder. And they're like, there's no way possible. You know, I'm like, well, come out. You'll be on the books here in a few years. Come out, see, and you got to experience what we do at Austin to get a full, true understanding what sound can do to the game.
Yeah, and I feel like Austin's an echo chamber, just the way that it's built with the berm and everything and how the stands kind of rise up around it. And it feels like, you know, everybody's shouting into an echo chamber. In these bigger stadiums, like, you know, the Big House at Michigan or Ohio Stadium at Ohio State and Penn State, they're huge. They're massive. It's kind of mind-bending to look at. But I'm with you. I feel like Autzen last year for that Ohio State game was louder.
I know for a fact it was. I was there for that Ohio State game. And you're right. The bigger the stadiums are, the more they kind of recess back. So that allows that sound to escape. But, man, Autzen, that Ohio State game, I've been a Duck fan for over, you know, 40 years, and that was the loudest experience I've ever had, was that end of the game when we won it. I mean, I thought you couldn't hear yourself think. It was just crazy atmosphere and environment.
Mark Byram with us, Urban Restaurant Group. For people who don't know the restaurant group, you know, we're talking about everything from speakeasies to cocktail bars to, I think, maybe the best burger place around. I mean, give me an idea.
Yes.
The burger place out at Cascade Station. I'm blanking on the name right now. Why am I blanking on the name?
It's okay. It's Fuller's Burger Shack.
Fuller's Burger Shack. And in fact, I was in there. Last time I was in there, you're sitting in there having a burger. It says something when the owner of the place is sitting in there having a burger.
one of my favorite burgers, classic American style diner. The story behind that is we bought Fuller's Coffee Shop back in 2018, and that was a second generation family that had bought that, the Fuller's family. And I loved their burger that was at this coffee shop down on 9th and Northwest Davis. And it, I'm just like, we have to take this burger and activate it and create a space. So that's what we did. And great success at that property. We're opening another one down in Eugene, actually right on campus, across from the bookstore.
Oh, it's going to kill.
That's one. Yeah, one of the brands we're looking to expand. It's an absolutely fantastic, simple burger. But as you saw, I'm there eating it. So that says a lot.
Are you like undercover boss in that situation, or do they all know you?
That's gone away a long time ago. They all know.
Yeah,
I think they have like cameras. They get cameras in the parking lot. Like they code each other.
They know you're
so
there.
So I walk in, everybody's busy. Yeah. It's
like well, it's a great place to get a burger, get a milkshake, obviously good stuff. But yeah, Fuller's Burger Shack for people who know. But Urban Restaurant Group, you guys are doing something big here. This Taste of Portland, you're bringing it back. Bunch of restaurants, 20-plus restaurants, breweries, wineries, distilleries. You're bringing it back October 6th, 6 to 9 p.m. That is coming up. This will be at the World Forestry Center with some live music. You can get tickets at tasteofpdx.com. Tell us, why is it important for you guys to bring this back?
Well, as most people probably know, the downtown corridor has been rough. It's been a tough bounce back for us. We had some glory years when we first came out of COVID, but it's just slowly diminishing. You know, and I moved to Portland in 1992, and I've seen the city grow for what it was before COVID and the height of food and wine and the beverage scene to where we are now. And I reflected back to when the dining scene really started about 94, 95. That's when we started getting national recognition from some of the chefs that would come out here because of our food culture, the farms, the winery, and it just kind of created this atmosphere. So back then we used to do these things, you know, Taste of Portland. We had, you know, the different festivals where we bring all the chefs together, restaurant owners, managers, and just try to recreate this culture and knowing that, hey, we're in it together. So I'm just trying to recreate that feel, start to build the building, if you will, to bring people back down, show them what we're still doing, get national attention, and show that, hey, Portland should be back on the map as a great restaurant scene. You know, these are the things that are still here, and just kind of, you know, if you will, shout at the top of our lungs, we're here, we're open, and we're fabulous.
I love that. I love that you're bringing it back, and I love that, you know, there's some pride in it. And so for people who want to check it out, again, tasteofpdx.com. This event is going on Monday night. This will be 6 to 9 p.m. You've got judging going on. I know Anna's going to be one of the celebrity judges. That'll be cool. And prizes award. Now, what's the winner get? Or what are the participating restaurants competing against each other? Or what? How does it work?
Yeah. Well, so we have the chef's choice, which would be from the judges itself. And then we have the fan participation. So each person that wins that award, it's a $500 payout for first place. And then we have also best food display. And so that gives all the creativity of the different restaurants to set up their booths. And the winner of that also gets $500 in cash. So there's some pride in it, but there's some money. It's monetary as well. So, you know, we want to reward those that come out and give their effort in making this a great event.
Several breweries, including Hopworks Brewery, McKenzie Brewing, also involved Trinchero Family Estates from a winery perspective. Of course, Bricks Tavern. Mark's talking. You're hearing to Mark. Go check out Bricks. That's one of our regular go-tos, several locations in the Portland area. Jake's Grill will be there as well and some others. My grandparents were in the restaurant business. It is a hard business, but you have been able to navigate it through pandemic, through everything that's going on downtown. I love that you're trying to be part of the solution here, Mark. But, you know, what has that been like for you?
Well, pandemic rock bottom, right? I mean, that's just how it was. I thought you couldn't go any lower. So you're starting out at that point, it's just, you know, re-recognizing yourself as a restaurateur and figuring out what you wanted to do. Great year afterwards. But, you know, it's been a slow demise in that downtown corridor. You know, the people have gotten scared away because of the things that might have happened in the past, in the past few years. And, you know, the new mayor's coming in. We're, you know, there's plans in place. You know, we got the fire coming in. You know, there's this synergy. We got the World Cup as a host team. So it's coming back, you know. But the problem is it's hopefully not too late for a lot of us restaurateurs that are downtown. I see them closing. I know the struggles that they're having. And, you know, I just want to salvage it. I just don't want to see us be an empty hollow city where we have, you know, for lease and not the restaurant season, the vibrancy. So in my world, there's always the different layers of how to get people in the restaurant industry. That's one, occupancy of the office spaces, having people downtown that are working, which makes lunch thrive, makes happy hour thrive. When you have that environment, you get the businessmen. So the businessmen are staying in the hotel. Now you got your dinner business, your lunch business. And then the third and the most crucial part is tourism. Tourism mm-hmm. plays a huge part in the corridor of our success as a restaurateur. So this is what we're focusing on. Now, this is all about spreading the word. The restaurant scene is still here. It's vibrant. Get the tourism getting back. Hopefully that brings the business people back. That brings the businesses. And we just slowly start this culture back over and making everybody successful.
The World Forestry Center is a great venue. There will be live music. There's a ton of participating restaurants. And so listeners, you know, look, if you want to cast a vote that says, hey, I believe in these small business owners who are fighting the good fight, going to Taste of Portland would be a great way to do that. More than 20 restaurants, breweries, wineries, and distilleries. This is Monday night, 6 to 9 p.m. You can get tickets at tasteofpdx.com. Mark, we're going to bring you back on tomorrow. We'll get an update on all this stuff. I have more questions about your trip. By the way, before I let you go, what was the actual travel like? Where did you fly into coming out of Portland?
We flew from Chicago to Philly.
Okay.
Friday night we did a Phillies game. Saturday we got up, drove to Harrisburg.
Okay.
Stayed night in Harrisburg, got transportation up and back, then back to Philadelphia on Sunday. We laid low, but then we hit up. We flew from Philadelphia to Denver, and we actually went to the Monday night football game. So,
oh man,
it was a pretty good trip.
That's a great trip, but there's a little planes, trains, and automobiles in it too, right? Like because you feel like you're navigating this amazing race, more reality TV.
It was certainly like that. We did touch all that. We did do a train, we did a plane, and we did a car.
I love that. All right, Mark Byram, you're fighting the good fight. Tasteofpdx.com. If you want to get tickets to this, spread the word. I've got it on Instagram. I've got it on Facebook as well. Please share it with other people. Love to see a big turnout for this event. Mark, thanks for what you're doing.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks for your time.
And there he goes, Mark Byram. Look, I hear it in his voice. He is pulling for downtown Portland. He is rooting for the other small business owners. There is no joy in watching a small business fail. And these restaurants are fighting the good fight. These are the ultimate survivors in this game. They've been through a pandemic. They've been through some lousy things that have happened downtown. And these restaurants are pulling together. World Forestry Center on Monday night, next Monday night. Be a great date night. Be a great outing for you and some friends. If you're into that kind of thing, if you're into food, if you're into having a beer or a glass of wine and great food, you can check it out at the World Forestry Center, tasteofpdx.com. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide on the Bald Face Truth Radio Network.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald Face Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
University of Wisconsin Eau Claire, this Division III university that plays football and baseball and gymnastics and ice hockey and some other sports. It's a Division III school. The Blue Golds, that's their mascot. Their colors are blue and gold, and they're the Blue Golds. Have you ever heard of this Division III university? I hadn't heard much about it, but something caught my eye. I was looking on social media, and I saw the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire's athletic department facility. It looked like the Taj Mahal. And so I started digging around because, you know, we've watched college athletics lose its mind. Everybody in pursuit of all these great media rights deals and NIL. And you're watching the Big Ten Conference now go after private equity and try to separate itself further from the SEC and everybody else, you know, in this arms race to get to the top of the mountain in college athletics. And the Big Ten certainly doing it better or maybe just doing it more ambitiously than others. But the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire caught my eye because this is a Division III school. They've had some success nationally in ice hockey, two national championships, the last in 2013. But you don't hear a lot about their football team. You don't hear a lot about their baseball or their basketball team, in part because they're doing college athletics like college athletics used to be done. And they have this Sonnentag Center. This is a wonderful event center that has the Sonntag name on it, and they've got this facility that is unmatched. It looks a little bit like the University of Oregon's facility. It's just mind-blowing to me to see how this has come together. But it got me thinking, like, not everybody is trying to be everything to everyone all the time. And what I mean by that is, like, everybody in college athletics is seemingly out over their skis trying to stay pace and trying to get as much as they possibly can and trying to share as much revenue with athletes. But this little 9,500 student campus that is in Wisconsin is defying some of the odds. It was founded in 1916, this school. It has an acceptance rate of like 76%. The in-state tuition is only like $9,000. Out-of-state tuition is $18,000. They have degrees that they offer in a variety of programs. And I started looking at this thing going, okay, you know, if you are a college student who's looking for a true college experience, why would you not look at this seventh biggest city in Wisconsin, has a population of 70,000, college town? Why would you not look at this place? And why aren't more Division II and Division III schools trying to be more like the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire? And in fact, why aren't more Division I schools trying to be more like this university? Well, of course, we know the answer to the Division I schools, because all the Division I schools care about, or seemingly care about now, is money. Can they get more? Can they make more? Can they belong to a conference that gets them more and a better TV deal? And lost in that is truly the spirit of college athletics. Now, I'm not talking about, well, hey, you know, like, you know, we shouldn't share revenue with athletes. Oh, the NIL and the portal is off the rails. Those are discussions for a different day. I do think athletes should share in the success that these athletic departments are having. And I loved when we had Jerry DiNardo, the former Notre Dame player who came on this show in the run-up to the last week, in the run-up to the Penn State-Oregon game. I don't know, did you hear that interview? Did you hear what DiNardo said? You know, when I talked to him about athletes earning money, he remembered being at Notre Dame back in the day. He remembered coaching. Of course, he coached at Vanderbilt, and he coached at Indiana. And as a guy who coached at LSU, he sort of saw the coaches start to make millions and millions of dollars and players starting to look around going, well, wait a minute, why aren't we sharing in that?
When I was in college, I got room, books, board, and tuition. Like we've talked, my dad was a cop, so it didn't cost my family anything for me to go to school. Eric Parsegian was my head coach, one of the greatest coaches in the history of the sport, was not allowed to make any more than the highest paid professor on campus. Mm. That was a Father Hesburgh rule, okay? So he had to get another job, so he opened up an insurance company. So that was fair to me, right? I mean, he wasn't rolling in the money, and I didn't have, my parents didn't have to pay a penny. But when you start paying Lincoln Riley $100 million for 10 years and think that he's not going to take a snap, he's not going to block anybody, how do you not change the dynamic? John, do you know this? When I first got into coaching, that, you know what the Pell Grant is?
Yes.
Are you familiar?
Yeah.
Okay, so when I first got into coaching, we had a team, we'd have team meetings, and we would pass out the Pell Grant forms to everyone, even if we were in someone's home that we knew wouldn't qualify. We weren't going to embarrass anybody. So everyone filled out the Pell Grant, and then we sent them in. The NCAA made a rule that the student athlete could not accept the Pell Grant.
Wow.
So the government money was awarded to our universities that we were all working at. It was against rules to give it to them, and they put it in the athletic department's budget. We would go recruit someone that room, books, board, and tuition was a great deal, just like it was for my dad, right, for me, with my mom and my dad. But my mom and dad could afford to, you know, send me a plane ticket from South Bend. They could afford to come see me play.
Yep.
Some people, without the Pell Grant, none of that could happen.
Yeah.
And the NCAA was taking that money from them. And so the gloves are off. I'm happy with all this stuff. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, and the other thing about the portal, what a lot of people don't know, like for 100 years or whatever, everybody but football, men's and women's basketball, hockey, and baseball, if I have the five correct, they were always allowed to transfer without penalty. So I could be sitting in a Notre Dame classroom back in the day, and some woman volleyball player could be next to me, and she could say, Jerry, I'm going to UCLA next year. And I said, you're going to sit out a year? And she would say to me, Cincinnati, what are you talking about? So the 1 year in residency wasn't for every athlete. Mm. So football players were treated differently. It was more restrictive for them. Why? So a coach could control his roster. So the university could make more money on football. So it made it harder for someone to transfer. So the history of all this stuff leads you to believe this is fair. It hasn't always been fair by design of the NCAA.
DiNardo made a great point on the show, and it's something that I've been thinking about since he appeared last week and you know, sort of made the case for athletes being paid and athletes sharing the success. Look, I want to share in the success of my employer. You want to share in the success that your employer enjoys. It makes you feel good about being part of a team. And so I understand that motivation from the Division I athlete. But I am still left looking at a school like University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, and I'm looking at Linfield College in the state of Oregon or Lewis and Clark, and I'm thinking, gosh, in the Division II, Division III NAIA ranks, there are some cases of college kids who aren't getting NIL money, who aren't really being lured into the portal, who are simply on their campuses fighting the good fight, being college athletes. You know, they're buying their own cleats out at Linfield. They're buying their own shirts out at Linfield. And they're participating in a system that feels a lot like a time warp. It feels like it's a journey in time. Now, the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire has got this incredible facility, $110 million facility, amazing facility that they have funded. I hope they don't lose their way. You see so much ambition. You see schools like Sacramento State wanting to say, hey, you know, we want to punch above our weight. We want to join FBS. We want to get out of this Big Sky Conference and go be a, you know, a Big 12 team or a Pac-12 team or a Mountain West team. And maybe someday they get their wish. Maybe Sacramento State deserves to be that. But there is a place in the ecosystem for Lewis and Clark. There's a place in the ecosystem for, you know, Pacific. There's a place in the ecosystem for University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, the Division III school. They're not a football powerhouse. They just created a great facility, and they're just trying to play Division III athletics and have the students get a true college experience, go to football games, be part of a team. Linfield College doing the same thing. You know, Willamette University doing the same thing. The Bearcats for years. There are a lot of people in this state that are probably nodding their heads that have something to do with a small college. I talked to a parent of a player at Linfield who literally implored me before the season, go out to Linfield, write a story about these kids. Man, they're just in it together. They're volunteering in the community. Hell, we had kids from Lewis and Clark. We had kids from Linfield who volunteered at Camp Exceptional this summer, poured into the community, rubbing shoulders with the Portland State guys that were out there volunteering their time. There is a lot of money at the top, at the pyramid of college athletics, particularly in football. But as you scale down the food chain, less and less money, fewer resources, you do find a sweet spot in there. And sometimes it's a Big Sky Conference game, and sometimes it's a D3 game, and sometimes it's an NAIA game or a Division II game. And I think there's a sweet spot in there where you find college kids who are doing it for the right reasons. My dad played professional baseball. He was in AAA with the New York Mets organization in 1969. He's a shortstop. He's a really good professional baseball player. To get to AAA, you have to be a really good player, particularly at that time. He came up through the minor leagues pre-expansion. He ends up, you know, as the Expos expand, he ends up in AAA with the Expos, AAA with the Mets. He's 25 years old when he retires. Probably if he sticks around, maybe he gets a cup of coffee. But he said, to hell with this. I need to go work and support a family. And, you know, he left the game. But I was different as a college kid. I played community college football, community college baseball. I was, you know, a two-sport guy in high school, baseball and football. I was all conference. But when I went off to college, I had a choice. Like, you know, I could have walked on in a couple of places, Santa Clara and St. Mary's, both saying, you can walk on. We don't have any scholarship money for you. Or I could go to a D2 and I could play and go to college. I had no illusion that I was a professional baseball player. I saw what a professional baseball player looked like in my household. I didn't beat my dad in a foot race until I was like 18 years old. So I had this weird perspective in going, yeah, you know, I'm probably not a pro athlete. I'm probably just a guy who's going to play maybe small college if I want to. And I went to a Division II school, and I played baseball, and I had a fun time. And I didn't get paid, and I didn't get NIL, but I can tell you, I made friendships, I had camaraderie, I got to compete, I got to be part of something bigger than myself. It was a lot of fun to do that, and I relate deeply with Division II, Division III, NAIA, community college athletes out there, many of whom probably know they're not going to be D1 athletes. They're not going to get this taste of the NIL. They're not going to get the transfer portal available to them. But, man, I rubbernecked a little bit looking at that facility at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. It was way better than anything I saw as a D2 athlete. This is a Division III school. My thought was, are they trying to become a D1 school? They're really not. They're really positioned well where they are, and they're comfortable in the shadow of all these other schools in their state, including the University of Wisconsin and Madison. And they're not trying to be the Badgers. They know who they are. Linfield, you know who you are. There's something proud about that. Lewis and Clark, you know who you are. Brad Elliott, the coach at Lewis and Clark, came out, brought his quarterback out to Camp Exceptional. They got rolled up their sleeves and got in there. They're not getting a bunch of NIL money. They're just trying to fight the good fight. Willamette University, same thing. I got a lot of respect for you if you are a small college athlete out there doing what college athletes have done for years and years and years. I'm not here to begrudge the D1 athlete who is trying to get what's theirs. But I am here to say, man, there's still a sweet spot out there, and we can't forget those small colleges that are out there trying to make it happen on a day-to-day basis. All right, 4 o'clock hour's coming up. Daniel Libet, Sportico. He had the big story on Oregon State and that NIL fiasco. We're going to dive deeper in the next segment. You want to know what's going on behind the scenes, speaking of money, stick around. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
We started today's show with a conversation with Brent Blaylock, who is the deputy athletic director at Oregon State and the chief operating officer. He had a lot to say about the school's NIL relationship with a company called Blueprint Sports. What is Oregon State guilty of here exactly? We're talking about it on today's show. I would love to open the phone lines in a bit to Beaver fans where they can weigh in, they can talk about their frustrations, and talk about whether or not this is about the team being 0-5, or maybe this is about the fundraising element itself. Look, Oregon State has this deal with Blueprint Sports. Not the only school that does. Others have dropped the relationship with Blueprint Sports. Is there some shadiness in the NIL world? I think we know there's probably, it's a Wild West. I think we've seen agents go into that world. We've seen coaches and athletic directors talk about it frequently. I think I certainly have questions myself about what's going on in the NIL world. And look, some of this I needed to be educated on. What is happening in the NIL space with Oregon State? Well, as Brent Blaylock explained to us, this third-party entity, Blueprint Sports, is out and raising money for Oregon State through sponsorships. This is not the individual memberships that we're talking about with fans giving and buying into the Damnation Collective. This is about sponsorships that come in through the third party. But the first $750,000 that Blueprint Sports raises for Oregon State keeps it all. The next $400,000, Blueprint gets 75% of that. As Brent Blaylock explained to us, that's where Blueprint is recouping some of their costs.
Where the revenue split starts is there once they clear the $750,000 mark. Now, why that's important is that gives us some certainty in a time where there's a lot of uncertainty. Now, we're expecting this deal to go well beyond that $750,000. But having that initial assurance that support is being provided directly to our student athletes, that's helpful for us, one, because our student athletes are worthy of that support, but also that is another resource line for our coaches to be able to recruit and retain the level of student athletes that we need to be successful here.
Oregon State could probably easily set this up in-house. And maybe what Oregon State's guilty of here is being a little lazy. But part of this may be that, you're looking at Oregon State, an entity that has been part of the Pac-12 conference rebuild, reeling and trying to put together an independent schedule. trying to live with life after Jonathan Smith leaves. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of moving parts. Does it help explain why Oregon State might want to outsource the NIL piece? Does the ability for Blueprint Sports to go out and get new dollars become super important here? I think it does. If they're not getting new dollars, this is not that great a deal for Oregon State. You don't want Blueprint to just come in and cannibalize your existing sponsorships. But if Blueprint can use those, air quotes here, relationships that they say they have with outside entities to go out and bring in dollars you wouldn't otherwise have, once you get above $1.15 million in these sponsorships, that 50-50 revenue split could easily be described as, hey, Oregon State's getting 50% of money that it might not otherwise have. I do think it's important to be fair to Oregon State here. I also think there are a lot of frustrated Beaver fans who are going to want to weigh in, who are going to want to say, hey, I'm not comfortable with this. I don't like the way this looks. I think further, there's another faction that's probably just frustrated with the way that things are going during the 0-5 start to this football season that are just mad about everything and they don't trust Oregon State. And I don't blame you if that's your take. I'd love to hear from you at 503-417-7575. You want to weigh in on all of that. Blaylock went on to explain that he thinks this is a beneficial partnership for Oregon State in other ways.
Once we clear $1.15 million, which again, we're expecting to do that as well, that's where it then becomes the 50-50 split. So as we look at this, everybody is motivated to grow the pie as much as you can. But because the more Blueprint earns for our student athletes, the more they make on that, that also motivates us as an athletic department to make sure that we're facilitating opportunities for them to max those things out. So when we're looking at the totality of those numbers, we always have to factor in that first initial tier, that $0 to $750,000, Blueprint's taking zero of those dollars. I think when we look at this stuff as well, when we look at the actual operation and how this will work with Blueprint, some other things that are not in that agreement, but they are how they operate and how they will certainly work with us, is all membership revenue goes directly to the student athletes. So if an individual signs up for, let's just say, a $500 a year membership plan, all $500 goes directly to the student athletes. They are not taking a percentage on that.
I think that's an important distinction. And forgive me, like when I originally saw this deal, I'll be honest with you, like I thought, wait a minute, if Oregon State fans are given $500 a year, is Blueprint getting a cut on that? And I wouldn't be comfortable with that if I was an Oregon State fan. But Blaylock is saying to us that the money that Oregon State fans and individuals give to the athletic department and give to the NIL collective, that money is passed through 100% to the athletes. I don't know. I don't know how comfortable I am with all of this. And I would love to hear from our listeners to figure out how comfortable they are as it pertains to this deal with Blueprint. Because on one hand, it's the Wild West. It is, it's the Autobahn. There's no speed limit. There's no rules. Nobody's ever done this. And I end up looking back at some of the stuff that was in the early part of the infancy of the NIL deals. And I'm looking back and going, hey, wait a minute. Some of this stuff, you got agents who aren't really agents who are mixed up in some of these deals. You've got athletes who really don't understand how to manage money or an endorsement deal who are mixed up. You have tax withholding to worry about, and some of these athletes never had to worry about tax withholding in their life, and they're now suddenly dealing with the fallout of, oh, I didn't set aside money for my taxes. Like, there were a lot of tentacles to this thing that were not understood by people. And so I think part of this is, you know, it looks to me like Oregon State was trying to do a deal with Blueprint Sports that made their life easy, where you don't have to hire employees. You don't have to have a bunch of employees that are going to be on your payroll. You're not going to have to set up the infrastructure for it. You're not going to have to come in and, handle the actual fundraising and go out and create relationships nationally that will bring NIL deals into your footprint. That this is an opportunity for Oregon State to, you know, is it a shortcut? Are they half-assing it here? I mean, you could certainly say that there are some problems here when you do business that way. But if Blueprint is operating above the board, they are absorbing the cost of the staffing, and they're supposed to,
in theory, introduce you to new sponsors and new dollars that you otherwise wouldn't have access to. Most of these deals, I would expect to have a 20% to a 40% commission attached to. 50% feels big to me after you get past $1.15 million. But other schools have signed on for the same deal, and I'm not privy to what a lot of the other schools are doing. I'm looking around trying to figure out what's customary. Did Oregon State sign a bad deal here? What is it that Oregon State actually signed? And so I think Blaylock, I love that he came on the show. I love that he faced the music. I love that we've had this conversation, at least with his side of the story. But I do want, in some form or fashion, to get your side of the story as an Oregon State fan. How are you feeling about all of this? What are you comfortable with? How uneasy do you get? How much of the angst in the market right now as it pertains to Oregon State football has to do with Oregon State being 0-5? Do you not trust what Oregon State's doing with the money because you don't trust what they're doing with their football program? Or is it something deeper? 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I want your phone calls. You can line up now. I also want, I want to say this too. Look, I reached out to Oregon State because I was uneasy with the reporting initially on this deal. I read the documents. I read the Sportico report. I started thinking hard about, what is going on with Oregon State? How much of this, it was unbelievable at face value that somebody would give away 75% of the proceeds that are brought in. Like, that's just not a good deal. And by the way, what happened to Damnation Collective and Kyle Bjornstad, who was running Damnation Collective? Well, looks like they sold the operation to Blueprint, as Blaylock points out. And then Blueprint is, saying, look, we're going to raise an initial $750,000. You get all of it. We need to recoup some of our operating expenses and our staffing expenses in the next $400,000, that next trough of money, and then after that, we go 50-50, and let's see how it goes. Does this end up being a bad deal for Oregon State? I mean, the Beavers are going to have to live with it one way or another. But for fans who are out there saying, hey, look, I'm giving $500. I don't want to give 75% of that to some other third party. I think it's an absolute killer for Oregon State because, as Blaylock is pointing out, that money is not impacted by this. The money that this is attached to is your new sponsorship deals. These are the major NIL deals. These are national partners that Blueprint, in theory, is supposed to bring in. Still, there is a discomfort that people have. And again, I say follow the money. There is a discomfort that people have in general as it pertains to this stuff. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I want your phone calls on this. One of the key parts of the interview for me is when I asked Blaylock, what happens when someone wants to make a donation to Damnation Collective versus a membership versus what is this Blueprint NIL thing about?
Yeah, I think your question actually has to do a lot with the evolution of this marketplace and what we're seeing in the post-house environment here. So NIL collectives before had been mostly driven by donations, people would donate in and then whoever was operating the collective, and this is across the country, would then find ways to be able to activate that with the student athletes. With the new scrutiny and the new guidelines that's coming with collectives in particular, but just NIL as a whole, a lot of this is evolving more into true activations of you are giving money to then get something back in return. So, if someone just wants to donate money, we certainly have a phenomenal team with our Beaver Nation and they're generating funds for our revenue sharing program for that. So that is a great place to be able to put just a pure donation. What we are now seeing is for those that are going to be active in the NIL third party space, that's where you're going to see a lot of things with the memberships or with events or exclusive access into things or being able to get behind the scenes with our programs and things like that. It's going to be more in that area of which Blueprint is an absolute leader in the country and less of just writing them a check.
Okay, at this point, I want to open it up to the phone lines. I'm going to leave a big, fat segment coming up. I want Beaver fans to weigh in, casual observers to weigh in. What are your thoughts on what you're hearing here from Blaylock? Where do you stand on it? Steven, I want your take as well. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network. Phone calls coming up, 503-417-7575. What is Oregon State guilty of?
What is their biggest sin? Are they lazy for not setting this up in-house? Are they smart for not setting this up in-house? Are you uncomfortable because you don't trust them? You tell me. 503-417-7575.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
All right, lay it on me. I want to hear it. I want to know what you made of the explanation from Oregon State. What questions do you still have? By the way, we got a caller in hour one who was upset about the way that I pronounced Appalachian State. Appalachian State? Appalachian State? Appalachian State. People always get mad. Texas State fans get mad because it's San Marcos, Texas. Not San Marcos, Texas. Boise, Idaho. Not Boise, Idaho. Boise, Idaho. We had the Jerry DiNardo, the football coach, on last week. He pronounced it Oregon. Oregon, like Rick Majerus did. Appalachian State. My bad, okay? My bad. A lot of pride in this. But I want to hear from you. Oregon State fan, casual observer, Brent Blaylock came on, the chief operating officer. What's Oregon State guilty of? What's their sin in this, if anything? How much of your perception or the statewide perception of what Oregon State's doing with this NIL collective is shaded by the fact that they're 0-5? I want to go to the phone lines, 503-417-7575. We have just one line open. Grab it. Steven, I want your take as well. You heard it. You've been outspoken about this. You heard them explain what it is. Tell me what questions you have or where you're at on this.
My questions would be... it sounds better than what we initially read, right? Like in the article, it made it seem like Oregon State was giving up so much revenue in this whole situation. But now that it seems like, you know, after the 750,000 mark, that's when all this percentages come in. That's great. I do still wonder, there have been schools, I believe, that have not worked with Blueprint. Like they had a deal and then they backed out of the deal. I wonder why those are being, so I still have questions about this. I wonder how much this is actually going to be beneficial to getting NIL deals with players. Like, shouldn't Oregon State and Damnation just be able to do that by themselves? Like, do they really need a third party to maneuver all of this? I just don't know if this is going to work because it's so new. And so that's all my questions I have is, like, there hasn't been enough sample size to be say, yeah, it's a great move to go with Blueprint, because we don't know everything that's going on. But it does seem also weird that it took an article to come out, it took you to reach out to Brent Blaylock to finally get some type of explanation on what exactly is going on with Oregon State. And I think that's the bigger issue, John, is that the communication of this whole deal and the whole NIL, the Damnation NIL deal, and where's Kyle Bjornstad? Like, where's all this stuff coming from? We haven't heard anything. There's been no peeps, no whispers, no nothing until it all kind of hit the fan all at once. Oregon State adding to it by being 0-5 in the season, I think does have to do with it. But so much bad has happened that it finally had to come out.
For sure.
And it had to be public knowledge. Why wasn't this said before? Why didn't we know all of this before all this stuff happened? It makes it seem shady, in my opinion.
This NIL stuff is a moving target, too, because when the House settlement came out, there were new ramifications. There was a clearinghouse all of a sudden, or was there a clearinghouse? And nobody quite knew what was going on. And so I wondered, while that was happening, like, we saw a lot of collectives that just shuttered and they closed down. We saw other collectives, people may remember last spring, they started giving money away hand over fist. They were just emptying the bank accounts because they knew that new oversight was coming. I'm a little confused and I'm a little murky on the whole thing with NIL and these collectives. Now, Daniel Libet, who's the reporter for Sportico, you may have seen him. He tweeted, just a few minutes ago that he said, hey, Canzano fairly called me out for not reaching out to Oregon State before publishing the article. It was an oversight on his part. You have to make that phone call if you're the reporter because you want to be fair to the people on the other side. But I get it. Like, Libet has got a document. He wants to put it out there. Probably should have reached out to Oregon State. I still am glad he put it out there because I think we need sunshine on this stuff and we need these public records put out there. I think if he reaches out to Oregon State, it doesn't quite have the pizzazz that the story did when it landed. But I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think, he says it's just an oversight. Let's go to the phone lines. DC's in Clackamas. DC, what do you make of all this?
Hey, John and Steve, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, my take on this is that, you know, I believe this is all extremely amplified because we are 0-5, right? You look at the sidelines, it appears like there's tension among the players and the coaches. The coaches are coming across as amateur. You know, I'd be curious how big of a spotlight this story would truly have if we were having a successful season and we were 4-1, 5-0. But, you know, with rumors circulating that the players aren't getting, you know, the full amount of their NIL deal, all of this stuff is very much overblown. With that, I just got to say I'm a very sad Beaver fan. I'm an alumni class of 09. Go Bees forever. Thanks for taking my call, John.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think it becomes a hot button issue because you're 0-5. I think if Oregon State is 5-0, nobody's talking about this. I don't think it's a big story. I think if they're 4-1, it's not a big story. I think if they're 3-2, it's not a big story. I think if they're 2-3, it's not a big story.
Does it go away if they win this week?
Doesn't go away. I think there are a lot of fans that maybe are going, hey, wait a minute, I'm giving $500 a month. Where's my donation going? And I don't blame those people, man. Like, you know, we have recurring donations that we make, like, to organizations that have ties to kids in other countries. Africa New Life is an organization that we give money to on a monthly basis, and there's a kid that we sponsor. We get a letter from her. She's in school. We watched her grow up. You know, we're like a lot of people, we're giving money to this organization. I feel good about it because we've got people at our church who have gone over and vetted the organization, and they say, okay, this money is actually getting to the kids. But if I had any question about it, first thing I'd do is I would pause the recurring donation. I'd be like, wait a minute, what are we doing here? And so I think there are a lot of Oregon State fans who want the explanation. I'm glad Brent Blaylock gave it. It still doesn't let Oregon State totally off the hook because there's part of this like, okay, I sit back, Stephen, and I go, okay, they're outsourcing this to a third party. Shouldn't they just be handling this in-house? Would they be doing just as well? And Oregon State may tell me, hey, look, we're trying to reconstitute a conference here. We got our eye on this. Trent Bray needs help. We're trying to build a program. Like, the, you know, we don't have time and the effort and the energy to kind of start this from scratch. And, like, I would buy that argument if that's what Oregon State's argument was. But I'm glad he came on the show and is willing to talk about it. Let's go to Michael in Corvallis. I got one line open at 417-7575 in the 503 area code. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. I'm, you know, Oregon State alum, big fan. And following this story, first, I guess I'll say I commend Blaylock for coming on the show. He didn't have to do that. There's a lot circling the administration, but you know, it just still feels like a lot of questions need to be asked and answered. Does Blueprint have a record of success? Is it true that 20 schools cut ties with Blueprint? Can donors at least subvert the Blueprint path and donate directly to OSU's NIL fund? That way, you know, big donations don't have to go through that 50% split. I think fans, the worrisome aspect of this, in my opinion, in the voices online, really, and which are real fans. I think the fan base has very different communities. But the worrisome thing to me really feels like, you know, what if it doesn't work out? And I think OSU needs to play mistake-free ball with NIL and realignment.
Mm-hmm.
So people are really nervous about that. And this administration, OSU, you know, Scott Barnes, the administration, they kind of insulate themselves away from, they never really say when they're wrong. So fans are just kind of at a point where it's like, well, we're hearing reports that Blueprint hasn't done well. The SANL, the other NIL acquisition didn't work out. So, like, we want OSU to admit when they're wrong. You know, there's a lost confidence amongst the fan base. So I just feel like that's where we're at. I feel like the interview had a lot more. There's a lot more to peel here.
Yes.
And, Yeah, sorry for rambling.
No, you're good. But you speak for a faction of people, Michael, that, you know, you tell me, your friends and other people you talk to that are Oregon State fans, there's one concern about football, and then there's another concern about, like, wait a minute, is there a systemic problem here?
Yeah, you know, like, is the administration capable of, are they capable of running both ships, are the two connected? And there is a loss of confidence, and we don't know. We want to see it to succeed, but we're all in this together all of a sudden. And so, yeah, that's where we feel powerless. I think that's where people feel powerless. I hate to say we, but that's a big part of it. People feel powerless and are skeptical, especially with what they're hearing.
Yeah, and especially, I think, is amplified by 0-5. Look, this whole NIL world, it's unregulated, or it was unregulated, and now they're trying to institute regulations, including that clearinghouse that comes in. I personally like to make sure that when I am giving to an organization, that money is getting to where it's supposed to get. And so I do think it's an important conversation, and I think it's really important for Oregon State. And I'll give Brent Blaylock some credit here. I reached out to him. He's on his way to the airport. He's traveling to go see this Oregon State, Appalachian State. What are we saying?
Appalachian.
Appalachian State. They're getting all mad, aren't they? Did that guy call in, really? He was all fired up?
Yep.
What was his tone? Give me an idea.
It was not happy. He said he cringes every time you say it. Appalachian. No.
Appalachian.
You were saying Appalachian. And he said it made him cringe every time. And he said nobody out there would ever say it that way.
Well, okay. I'm sure somebody would. Appalachian. Is that right?
I think so. I Googled it.
Can someone who knows how to pronounce Appalachian State call in and tell us? Here's another one, because everyone could relate to this. Call in and tell me the pronunciation that drives you crazy. Because last week it was Jerry DiNardo saying Oregon. And I've heard from people in Boise who cringe when the people say Boise. I also know that the Gonzaga fan base does not like Gonzaga.
The Zags.
So give me the pronunciation that makes you cringe. And for our Appalachian State people out there, who wants to call in and tell me how to say it, teach me how to say it. I'll never say it wrong again. I also had somebody once upon a time when I first started this radio show. By the way, the number's 503-417-7575. First started the show, I said Corvallis. And somebody called in and said, it's pronounced Corvallis. And ever since then, I've said Corvallis. And then I get a lot of props from the locals in the 541 over there. So you tell me, what is the cringeworthy pronunciation that you hear all the time that drives you bonkers? And you tell me, if somebody wants to give me the Appalachian State deal, I'll take it, because we would like to be able to pronounce that school's name. Also, Rick Majerus once upon a time came on the show. This is how he would say it. Called me Joe also when he left me a voicemail, but listen to how Majerus talks.
Hey, Jim, this is Rick Majerus. I'm the coach of St. Louis University, and I was giving you a call. I'm sorry, John. I was just talking to Jim, the recruit. God, this is how old I am. But, John, I'm the coach at St. Louis University, and I'm Brian Conklin's coach. Conklin's from Eugene, Oregon, and he just made academic All-American and first-team All-League, and we're on our way to the NCAA tournament. We were 24-6, and he's been a giant part of it, and I was just wondering if you might want to just do a little blurb on it or a little piece on him for the Oregonian papers. I'm sorry if I seem discombobulated and confused. I'm trying to watch tape of our first-round tournament opponent, LaSalle, as I'm speaking to you. But in any event, if you want to give me a call back, I'm sorry, John, for the confusion. I'll call you back as well and try to reach you. And if, there's no interest that I understand, but he's from Eugene, Oregon. He's a local guy. It's interesting. Both he and Doliak didn't have a scholarship out of high school. Both made academic All-American. Now, Conklin won't be a pro, but both were on NCAA tournament teams for me, and both had great careers. So, all right. Well, thank you. Thank you, John. Once again, Rick Majerus. Bye.
Bye, Oregon. I love that. I'm one of these people, I can't throw away voicemail like that. When he died, I was like, I'm just saving that forever. I've got messages from Bill Shonley, too. We should do a whole show sometime of people who have passed away and voicemail messages that you have on your phone. Mark in Portland has called in. He's got a pronunciation thing for us. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, first of all, John, I'm from Beaverton, but I really appreciated what you had to say about Eau Claire and Linfield and so on. But the pronunciation, it's Eau Claire. I grew up my grade school years and was a Packer fan and lived about an hour north of Eau Claire, and my mom graduated with an education degree from there. So I just thought I'd
do
that, and thank you for the for what you had to say, though. I thought that was a great
piece. Well, there's some places still out there that are doing college sports, you know what I mean? Like, it's not dead everywhere, is what I'm saying, and especially not dead in Eau Claire. Wisconsin, Eau Claire. Love it.
All right.
Thank you, Mark. There's Mark. All right, let's go to Mario, who's in Woodburn. Mario, welcome to the show. What's up, man?
I think the pronunciation that annoys me, it came up on your show a while back, is San Marcos, Texas.
Yeah.
It's not Marcus. You know, when I hear it, it's people not wanting to say something in Spanish, so they've changed it from Marcos to Marcus. And it's kind of, and I think there's a lot to be said about that, but it's not correct, and I have family in Texas, and they all say San Marcos.
They do. Okay, so the president at the school corrected me when we had him on the show. He said it's San Marcos. So I'm gonna have to I'm gonna have to pick a bone with him.
Yeah, well, I think there's some people have problems with anything that might be in a different language, so they try to anglicize it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hear you. I appreciate that.
Thank you,
Mario. Thank you for that. I grew up, the community that I grew up in, it was 50% Hispanic and agricultural community. There was a segment of kids, you know, that went to my elementary school and junior high and high school that were migrant workers or seasonal workers. And so I was introduced to some of the, you know, pronunciations as a young kid. And then I went out into the world and I was like, people don't know how to say that. Cilantro. You don't know how to say that. You say cilantro. Mike is in Salem. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, the former radio voice for years for the Willamette Bearcats, better known as Willamette, damn it.
Yeah, I love that. Willamette gets mispronounced often, as does Cooch Street, and Oregon.
Yeah. And then if you're from Massachusetts and you live near the city of Peabody, it's pronounced Peabody.
Peabody.
There you go.
Not to be confused with
P. Diddy.
P. Diddy and the Freak Offs. Do they have Freak Offs in P. Diddy?
I sure hope not. I always liked Washington when people said Washington. Oh,
Dennis Erickson does that. Sometimes I call Dennis Erickson just to ask him, what do you think of the Huskies?
The other one that I love, my mom does this. She calls Chipotle Chipotle. She just rearranges the letters.
I do that with my older daughter because she loves it. I call it Chipolote. I go, are we going to Chipolote? She's like, Dad, it's Chipotle.
Chipotle.
Sorry.
You do it too.
Chipolote. wait, so help me with Appalachian.
Here, let me pull up Google again. I wanted to make sure the caller was right, and it sounded like they were. So let me type this in here.
Appalachian.
Here we go. Here's Google. Here's the official pronunciation.
Appalachian State.
Appalachian State. Not Apple. All right. So who are we liking this? Appalachian State, Oregon State. Do you trust AI, though? Come on. There's a little bit of...
Oh, I
do. You really trust that? Don't trust Siri, you know? You don't trust Alexa. Who's going to win that Oregon State-Appalachian State game? Because I have an official pick out at johnconzano.com. You want to see my picks for the week, but that game's 12:30 Saturday on ESPN+. That is a must win. Trent Bray said it. They're all must wins now. He's not wrong. In a normal world, Oregon State could be 2-3, but they are 0-5. Appalachian State got shoved around by Boise State last week. Two pick sixes for the Boise State defense. The quarterback for Appalachian State, not very good. Only 9 first downs for the Mountaineers, pronounced Mountaineers. 184 total yards. I think this lines up very nicely for Malik Murphy. I think big game for him. I'm not worried about Oregon State's offense. I'm not worried about Oregon State's defense. I'm worried about Oregon State kicking a field goal or punting the football. Appalachian State, 1.5-point favorite in this game. Steven, I'm crawling out on a limb. I like the Beavers to win outright. Give me the dog and the points. How about you?
We can go head-to-head on this one. I think Appalachian, not Appalachian, but Appalachian State. Will get the win. I've been listening to some people talk about that, and you've talked about it as well. Just the travel to Boone, North Carolina, is a little difficult. That is a tough place to play. Now, the Appalachian State is not as good as they once were. Like they've had a lot better teams in the past.
2-2.
But I do think that they are good enough that fan base is going to be excited because you know a team like Oregon State still has somewhat of a name. When you travel to Appalachian State, I think they'll be ready for it. And I can't trust Oregon State right now in those special teams. Like, you're telling me that I can trust Oregon State to kick field goal? I can trust them. I can trust them to, you know, to snap the ball on a punt? I can't. And so I think that could come back to haunt them still. So I'll take Appalachian.
All right. So Appalachian's wins are over Lindenwood and Charlotte. They lost to Georgia Southern. They lost to Southern Miss, and Boise State blew them off the field. So I just, the Lindenwood Lions, by the way, you know, they lost 38-0 to Miami of Ohio.
Not taking that win seriously, huh?
I think Appalachian State is a pretender. That's what I think. Let's go to TZ in Eugene, Oregon. TZ, what's up?
Hey, John. Love the show, man. You're seeing it right now. Appalachian State. Okay. The problem, I think, is that it's a mountain range, it's a region, and accents differ if you're in the south, which is where Appalachian State is. In North Carolina, you would say Appalachian. If you're up north in Pennsylvania or up there, you would say it that other way.
I'm actually an
alumni of ASU, and so I called in yesterday. I had to drop off the phone, but you're saying it right today.
Okay, so help us out. They call it ASU, like Arizona State does. Give us an idea. What's it like to be a student there? What's campus like in Boone, North Carolina?
Oh, it is gorgeous. It's in the Southern Appalachians. It's at 3,300 feet elevation, so it's not, Utah or anything like that. But elevation is higher than the valley here, and it's going to be beautiful fall colors, probably very diverse area botanically. So beautiful tree color everywhere. And it's kind of when I went there, I graduated in 2000. It was kind of like a hippie town for the Southeast. So a lot of alternative kind of people living around there. But, I guess it's kind of a football school now in some way. Well,
I love it. After that win over Michigan a couple of years ago, I got a lot of run. CJ's in Vancouver. We're working on phonetics today. CJ, what's going on?
Hello, John. Thank you so much. I'm first-time caller, but I love your show and listen
Thank
all the
you.
Time.
Thanks,
I'm
man.
Also bald like you, so it makes a
small world
a good thing I appreciate about you.
We're making it cool.
My grandfather, this is one of my favorite stories. We're really close. He would tell us all the time that Gleason Street, it was supposed to be pronounced Glisten.
Mm-hmm.
And we laughed at him. He's like, no, this is named after a doctor in the area called Dr. Glisten. And one night when we were watching a news broadcast, somebody came on and said that, hey, we've been pronouncing this wrong all the time. This is supposed to be named after Dr. Glisten. And my grandpa just sat back in his chair with the biggest grin on his face and basically was like, I told you so.
Yeah.
And so to honor him, I call it that all the time now, and people hate it, but I'm like, hey, I'm going to call it like it should be.
I have heard that as well, that it's Glisten, not Gleason. It's couch, cooch, not couch. What else do we have? Burnside is Burnside. There are pronunciations that drive people crazy. We're here setting the world straight. We started with Rick Majerus in Oregon. He never did get it right. Mike's in Klamath Falls. Love the calls from Klamath Falls, 960 AM. Go ahead, Mike. What's up?
Hello there. I just want to make a couple comments. One is we were patient with Jonathan Smith. I think we should be patient with our current coach at least a little bit longer. A couple other points. One is when you have a big turnover in your team, you're really thin at some positions like long snapper. Mm. Also, I would like to comment that in the old days, we would say that Oregon poached our kicker. Now, with the portal, it's probably not quite the same, but I feel like they poached our kicker, and he's a lot better than what we got now.
Yeah.
The other thing is I'm really hoping that this NIL deal isn't like a deal with their basketball coach with a 10-year extension. Hopefully they have a look in a year or two so we can see if they're any good. That's
appreciate that. Yeah, appreciate that. All good comments, Mike in Klamath Falls. We're going to play Punch It Audio coming up, the 5 at 5 top of the hour. We're going to lead you right into Thursday Night Football. You got the BFT statewide. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We're going to play some Punch-It Audio here. We'll lead you right into Thursday Night Football with the 5 at 5 coming up after the top of the hour. I love the pronunciation help. Let's do it, Stephen.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio, presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with Oregon State. Nigel Burton, formerly of the Pac-12 Network, now with the CW, says Oregon State's got to be more aggressive on offense.
Inside zone, first down, second down, and now you get yourself in third and long. It's like, I want to see that on first down. I want to see it after a big run. I want to see simple throws. I don't care if it's a bubble screen, slants, hitches, anything that just keeps the defense off balance. And down the stretch, it's like they got so tight because they're desperate for a win that they end up playing right into the hands of Houston because they loaded the box. Everybody in the stadium knew they were going to run it, and they did just that. And then look, and finally, you know, I know we're running it, but you know, Ryan Gunderson then finally calls a switch route down the sideline. I believe it was David Wells wide open. Malik kind of underthrows the ball, and then he drops it. I mean, all those moments together then kind of led to the result that you got. And again, super tough. And you know, they've got to figure it out.
Super tough. Got to figure it out. Can't drop the ball. I do like the idea that Oregon State needs to be more aggressive. Play to win. Don't play not to lose. I hated how in a shell they got in the fourth quarter as Houston was coming back in that game. Pedal to the metal. You're not playing for the college football playoff. Play to win the game.
You went out and got Malik Murphy for $1.5 million. Let's use the guy. Let's get Trent Walker open. That guy gets open like every single play, man. Just get to Trent.
I like what you're saying. Use the guy. Appalachian State. Coach Dowell, what's his name? Loggins?
I did not look that one up. I should have thrown it.
This is a nightmare.
They are the toughest pronunciation in the nation.
Why couldn't Appalachian State's coach be named Joe McGee? This is not Joe McGee. This is Dowell Loggins.
Look at who they've lost to. They've lost to really good football teams, to P4 teams with big NIL budgets. And you go back and you look at how they lost to Houston. I mean, they had a lead, and they lost a lead because of special teams mishaps. And the line between winning and losing is so fine. It's so fine, and sometimes the game gets away from you, and you look at the end of the season, and it's really the difference in having a really good season, a bad season. Do you win those close games?
Do you win those close games? That's the difference between a good season and a bad season. Boise State just handled Appalachian State. Will Oregon State be able to do it? Urban Meyer confused. He's confused. He does not understand how USC isn't great. Here's Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, they let me down. I thought, you know, I mean, my whole playbook was about their physicality and about how that changes the culture of the program. It changes the offseason, changes practice. And right in front of our eyes, Mark, they got pushed around by Illinois. They got beat by 50 points to Indiana. So I don't know. That one's an enigma to me. I don't understand the whole USC to me. I always held them as a top 2-3 program in the country. They have it all right there.
Urban Meyer, is he auditioning for the USC job? Does he want the job, Stephen?
I actually thought the same thing when he was talking about that. Like, they got it all. I mean, he probably would win a ton there, wouldn't he? I mean, I hate the guy. Nobody likes him, but he'd win football games.
Yeah, it just kind of sounded to me like he wants the job. Josh Pate says Dan Lanning's not leaving Oregon. I agree. Dan Lanning's not leaving Oregon.
Dan's not leaving Oregon. He's not leaving Oregon because at Oregon, it's the only place where you have a deal with the school and you've got a separate deal with Phil Knight, basically. I mean, we talk about buyouts all the time. And typically, you're talking about, oh, it's going to cost $8 million, $10 million, $12 million. When you really understand Dan Lanning's life there, you're talking about a $40 to $50 million buyout. No one's willing to hit that, nor should they. And even if it wasn't that, so let's pretend that wasn't the case. Let's just pretend all the rest of the dynamics were in place at Oregon. You mentioned facilities. Another thing people need to know is when you go up there right now, you sit in his office, you look out. It's cranes everywhere. It's earth moving everywhere because they're overhauling it again. So this time next year, they'll be ahead of the pack again on that front.
Head of the pack again. Pate's talking about Dan Lanning and the job. I'm going to talk for a second about Dan Lanning's family. He and his wife, Sophia, moved those kids 11 times in like 9 years. They moved all over the place. Dan Lanning told me very early in his tenure, as did his parents, that they wanted to stay. They want their kids to all graduate from the same high school. Now, that's not a forever thing, but keep an eye on his youngest son. And, you know, I think he's got one in high school now. He's got one in middle school. He's got one kind of late elementary school. And keep an eye on that. I think you have at least 3, 4, 5 years before, maybe 6, 7 years before this is a question. But I think Lanning's here for a while. I don't really think it has to do necessarily with, you know, that having a deal with Phil Knight, having a, you know, or the cranes being there. But it's part of it. I mean, he's got arguably Oregon is the best job in college football. You have a chance to win a national championship every year. You can say that at Notre Dame. You can say that at Ohio State. You could probably say that at Miami in this current element. But, you know, you can't say that at a lot of other places. Meanwhile, Dan Lanning and what he told Dante Moore after the win over Penn State.
I love you. You know, it's just, and it's not because of how well he played. It's about the buy-in. It's about the work that he's put in. It's about the extra time. It's about the way he treats his teammates. It's the, you know, the composure that he shows, the way he makes people around him.
Well, they're building a QB in Eugene. I like that. I like that they've got a lot of players they recruited out of high school, and they've got a guy in Dante Moore that they bet on. When he got better after he went to Oregon. Just like Dylan Gabriel, just like Bo Nix, Dante Moore's life got better as a football player after he went to Oregon. Coming up, the 5 at 5. Steven's got us covered. We're going to lead you right into Thursday Night Football. It's going to be really fast moving. Buckle up.
BFFT. From the Pack West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. Here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Got an update on the Brian Conklin situation. Heard from a local basketball aficionado that said Conklin just finished up playing high-level pro ball in Europe. It's like a 12 or 13-year pro over there. He lives in West Lynn now. Brian Conklin, fist bump to you. And by the way, Conklin was the dude on the last big high school team to go undefeated in Oregon, North Eugene High School. So shout out to Brian Conklin, who got a shout out from Rick Majerus all those years ago on this show. He probably doesn't even know it. I hope someone tells him. We have the 5 at 5. We also have Thursday Night Football in the NFL coming up. Right here on 750 The Game. Steven, you got a dog in the fight? Certainly, Rams-Niners is interesting to me. Niners are playing a little shorthanded. I don't love this one for the Niners.
No dog in the fight. I have no bet on the game. If I were to bet and you made me bet, which may happen or not, but I would take the Niners +8.5.
Ooh, +8.5?
Yeah, it's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points for an NFL game, isn't it? So I'm seeing it at 7.5 right now. +340 on the money line.
I wouldn't take that.
You would not touch it on the money line, huh?
Nah.
Niners at 7.5. Do you like it still?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not much difference between 7 and 8.
Okay. See what happens. Steven's got his pick in. How about you? All right, let's go to the 5 at 5.
The Five at Five. Number one.
We got the NFL for Thursday night, but we got Major League Baseball postseason in full effect. Last night, the Dodgers, they wrapped up their series against the Reds, swept the Reds 2-0 in that one. Now the Dodgers are going to face off against the Phillies in the NLDS. That should be a fun series going on there. And earlier today, the Detroit Tigers went on the road and beat the Cleveland Guardians in Cleveland. Tigers will now face the Mariners in the ALDS. Game one of that one will be in Seattle. On Saturday on Fox, time TBD. But we now know the Mariners' opponent, the Detroit Tigers. Mariners should be favored in that series. I mean, Mariners, they're the favorite in the American League, John. Should be pretty exciting to watch some playoff baseball up in Seattle.
Well, the Mariners are such a good story. And for Mariners fans who have labored over the years, I will present to you this day in Mariners history. You may remember this.
They would love a base hit into the gap, and they could win it with junior speed this stretch. And the 0-1 pitch on the way to Edgar Martinez. Swung on the line down the left field line for a base hit. Here comes Joy. Here is Junior to third base. They're going to wave him in. The throw to the plate will be late. The Mariners are going to play for the American League Championship. I don't believe it. It just continues. My, oh my. Edgar Martinez with a double. Ripped down the left field line, and they are going crazy at the Kingdom.
There it is. Bob Niehaus on the call. Dave. Mariners in the postseason. Dave Niehaus on the call. I was worried about his last name and the pronunciation. And I did what Rick Majerus did. Jim.
Number two.
Well, John, if you're heading up to Seattle for the game on Saturday, the Mariners, they're rolling out some new food options. Now, I don't know why you wouldn't just get garlic fries. I mean, what are we doing? That's just the go-to. But the Mariners do have some new things they are rolling out. They have a postseason value pack, which includes a Mariner dog, a soda, and a red rope. That's going to be $12. Well, $11.99. The Mariner dog, you have a refillable 16-ounce Coca-Cola soda and then those red ropes. Now, they also have a PNW pretzel. Was a giant pretzel with cheese sauce with wild huckleberry mustard and dill salmon spread. That sounds pretty decent. The Pacific Pitmaster Potato, which is smoked, salt-rubbed baked potato with cheddar, brisket, burnt ends, and more. Give me that. Claws and Caviar, which is the Pacific Snow Crab claw in a souvenir helmet served with caviar creme dip. I would take that as well. The No Moo Cheesesteak, which is a plant-based twist on the ballpark classic featuring pulled oat protein and cashew-based cheese sauce. Probably pass on that one. And then they have a Sasquatch Sundae. Vanilla soft serve with berry compote, granola, and fried sage leaves. Mm. So they're bringing out some brand new stuff for the postseason.
Like that they're bringing out new stuff, but as James Earl Jones said in Field of Dreams, dog and a beer for this guy.
Number three.
Keep it simple. Dog and a beer.
All right. Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports, John. He is reporting that executives are inching closer to an agreement to expand the NCAA tournament to 76 teams.
Oh, boy.
Starting in 2026-27. Now, what that would mean, though, is they would have a 12-game opening round, which would be played at two different sites. Right now, they have the first four games that are played in Dayton. But then under this new agreement that they're looking at, it would be 76 teams, but it would be a 12-game opening round played at the two sites. I don't love it, obviously. Like, why are we expanding? I think 99% of fans, or more than 99% of fans, don't want this. But I will say this. At least they're not messing with the first round. We'll still get the first round 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on a Thursday. If we're going to expand, which they're going to, I only want them to expand in the, quote, opening round. I don't want you to expand farther than that. So it's the best of a bad situation in my mind if this is what they do, because they're going to expand. But why are we even doing this, man? A 12-game opening round. Nobody cares about the first four anyways. Why are we doing this?
They're doing it for money. Cha-ching. They're ringing the bell. They're ringing the register. It's money. You know, follow the money. We said that at the beginning of the show, but and here they are.
Number four.
All right, football players are a different breed, John. Jacksonville Jaguars defensive end Trayvon Walker, he underwent left wrist surgery on Monday of this week, but Liam Cohen, the head coach, said there is a chance he could play on Monday night after wrist surgery. He said he'll be listed as day-to-day. So he underwent surgery on Monday. Jags played the Chiefs on Monday. So it'll be a week after the actual surgery. He will be listed as day-to-day. Walker injured during the second quarter of the Jags win over the 49ers. He walked to the sideline, held his wrist, did not return. But there's a chance he plays on Sunday. Some of these football players, man, they are just different breeds. You go on to surgery on a Monday. Yeah, a week later, let's just go out and play football where you're running into other people. Pretty crazy.
I saw James Williams, J.D. Williams, a first-round draft pick for the Buffalo Bills. Saw him in college. He had a meniscus repair on a Monday. He played in a college football game on a Saturday. And, yeah, it's a minor surgery. It's a knee surgery, though. And I'm just like, what are you doing? It's insane.
Number five.
Well, and finally, the 49ers lost last week. The Jags, they will try to bounce back as they take on the Los Angeles Rams down at SoFi Stadium in L.A. Rams, huge 8.5-point favorites because the 49ers, well, they'll be without Brock Purdy, Ricky Pearsall, Juwan Jennings, and plenty more of players that will not be playing. But a lot of the offense will be gone. Mac Jones getting the start, looking for a lot of Christian McCaffrey if the 49ers want to keep it close. But that will be the Thursday night football game of the week.
There you go. Big Niners, 7.5 is the spread now.
Sorry.
It moved. It moved since you...
since I updated
since
my
you
update
you updated
here.
Your update. The spread moved. Look, Niners, Purdy's got a toe thing. Mac Jones is starting. I'm also, you know, looking at the Niners. I'm going, no Brandon Ayuk, no George Kittle.
Do you think if they played Sunday, these guys would play? Like, is the Thursday night going to really hinder a lot of the stuff?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, but the Rams are coming off their first loss of the season at home to the Jaguars. The 49ers coming off their loss to the Jaguars, and the Rams, you know, I watched them, two weeks ago, have a big lead against the Philadelphia Eagles and lose. Rams have won three straight head-to-head. 49ers have injury problems, but... here's an interesting stat. Niners have not allowed more than 186 pass yards in a game this season. Rams are averaging 265 with Stafford. That feels like it's going to change tonight. Like that feels like in the game tonight. Mac Jones gets his third start. Ricky Pearsall's out. Christian McCaffrey. Yeah, they're just going to have to give the ball to McCaffrey all day. The Niners are going to have to try to win this game in the 20s, don't you think? Don't you think the Niners are going to have to make this like a 27-24 game? That's the kind of game they can win.
Yeah, it's going to have to be the defense. You're right. Like, if the 49ers can kind of contain that Rams passing attack with Puka Nacua and Stafford, the 49ers have a chance because Shanahan is a really good coach. I'm not going to put anything past him, but I think it's got to be a low-scoring type of game.
So Niners and Rams are coming up. I want you here for it. We're back tomorrow with a great Friday show. The BFT jury will be back with Michael Llewellyn and John Strong, the voice of American soccer, Craig Burnback, who you can check on Friday night flights during the high school football season in longtime sports anchor and reporter. Grab a podcast of the show wherever you get a podcast. Check out my picks at johnconzano.com. What did I get right? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? And put your own picks in the comment section. I love that when the readers put, you know, hey, I think you got this game wrong. A lot of debate about Washington traveling all across the country to Maryland, Stephen. Maryland is a really good team. They got a good quarterback. Washington's going across the country after this Ohio State game. Will the Huskies be able to handle that travel? We're back tomorrow with another great show. Thanks, everybody, for being here.